You're listening to Unseminary's All About Multisite podcast. Are you launching another location and not sure where to start? Do you already have a few campuses, but they're not thriving as much as you'd like? We've gathered industry-leading church leaders to help answer all of your multisite church questions. Unseminary, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Unseminary's All About Multisite. This is a brand new podcast we're launching today, and I am so glad that you have decided to tune in. This podcast is all about multisite. I know the naming, it's very sophisticated naming nomenclatures here at Unseminary. And what we're talking about, this is a little bit of a dream for me. What I've done is gathered together what I call the Avengers of multisite, people who are, from my perspective, real experts when it comes to multi-site church and how we do multi-site. And what we're going to do every month is take your questions. And really, we want to, this show only works if you send us your questions. And so every month, we're going to take a couple questions and really dive in. And this is really going to be a great help, I think, for churches as we wrestle with multi-site. Multi-site continues to be really a growing aspect of churches that are trying to make a difference across North America. 1 in 6 churches in North America, if you can believe it, are multi-site, which seems crazy to me because when we started multi-site, 15, 16 years ago when I started, and there was a dozen that I knew of, and I was like, that seemed like a lot at the time. Now there's somewhere over 1,000. Well, anyways, let's do a quick introductions to our panel. First, I want to introduce you to Natalie Frisk. She's our family ministry expert. She's a key leader from the Meeting House in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. They have churches, campuses there, and actually kind of across all of Ontario. This church has 19 locations. I think 19, if I'm counting correct. Is that right, Natalie?
Yeah, we have 18 kind of our full-bodied locations, and then we have a 19th that's called a preview location. So,
okay,
yeah.
Fantastic. So this is a great church. They've been leading the way in so many ways. And Natalie is our family ministry expert. She's doing a killer job on kids and youth curriculum. They do all kinds of amazing things. So Natalie, I am so glad you're here. Thanks for joining the show today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rich. Appreciate it.
No, I'm excited to have you. So next we got Greg Curtis. He's our guest connections and assimilation expert. When people ask me anything to do with kind of how do we get people plugged in? What does it look like to get guests connected? How do we get people, move people from being guests to ultimately being plugged into community? The person's name who comes to mind is always Greg Curtis. And I often think, to be honest, Greg, I'm like, what would Greg say in this moment? So Greg, so glad. Eastside Church, why don't you tell us a little bit about your church? Give us a flavor of your church.
Our church is a 55-year-old church, but really it's always been on the progressive end of things. I've been a part of it since I was 14 years old in some fashion or another. And last 5 years I've been director of assimilation, but the church, 5 years ago when I took on that position, we were at 3,200. Now, gosh, our services are up around 10,000.
It's amazing.
For the weekends. And so we were second fastest growing church on the 100 list this year, and we have 4 campuses currently, and we're just launching our 4th right now.
Nice. Fantastic. Great. Ben Stapley is our communications and service programming expert. He's a guru. He's really just an amazing leader. His day job is at Liquid Church in New Jersey. He really is so good on all the kind of programming stuff, not only just obviously in one location, but in many. Ben is also one of the most helpful guys I know. He online is constantly helping other church leaders. Ben, welcome to the show. Why don't you give us a sense of what's been happening, I don't know, in the last year or so at Liquid Church? What's been on the horizon for you guys?
Yeah, so we launched, I've been there as the creative arts pastor for the past 2 years, and we launched our 6th campus last year. And this year we're looking at launching our 7th campus, and it's going to be a little bit different for us. We're in Jersey, and this is going to be a different switch for us because it's going to be a little more urban in its setting. And so for us, that's a game changer. Most of our campuses in the past, the 6 ones, have been pretty similar in terms of the target audience, and then we're gonna have a different target audience for us for a 7th. So that's gonna be a game changer for us. Looking to learn from other people of how they do that well.
Fantastic. This is great. Again, I'm so honored that you guys have taken time out to be on this show, to really get a chance to help other leaders. I've been involved in multi-site, like I said earlier in the show, since the early 2000s, been in the direct driver's seat of, I think, 14 different campus launches over the years, actually at both the Meeting House and at Liquid Church, which is kind of fun. And just love multi-site, love helping churches that think about multi-site. And so we're privileged to join in. Well, before we jump in with today's questions, I want to remind listeners that we would love to get your audio questions for future episodes. All you need to do is just get out your phone, record it. You know, you probably know how to do that. Make a little voice memo and email it over to me, just rich@unseminary.com. We're happy to take those questions. We anticipate doing these episodes about once a month. And so we would love to get your questions for future episodes, really anything to do with multi-site, since it's all about multi-site. Well, let's jump in. We've got the first question. Let's listen in to Evan Courtney from the Fields Church.
This is Evan Courtney from the Fields Church in Mattoon, Illinois, and we are actually a church in rural Illinois in a community of about 18,000, and we are in the middle of creating a multi-site structure and plan to be able to be a church that can be multi-site, and we are launching our first location in this October. And so my question is, we're currently at a stacked leadership structure, kind of the traditional church structure, and we're switching to a matrix model. So we're sitting here in January, and that's happening, the launch is in October. So when do we make that shift? When do those things flip to actually going to a matrix model? We're proposed to bring in our campus pastor in July. So when does that happen? So that's the question, is when do we make that shift with our current staff?
Perfect. Great question. You know, what Evan's talking about here, the matrix model, and one of the things you might know is, you know, multi-site churches basically have two layers of staff that are really responsible for making the ministry happen. In your traditional church, what he talked about is kind of a stack leadership. It's almost like a pyramid that goes up through the entire organization. But a lot of multi-site churches end up making really a switch to what we call a matrix, which basically means, at its simplest form, that if you're responsible for a ministry area within a campus, you kind of have two supervisors. You have the local campus leadership, and then you also have some sort of central staff. And how those two relate to each other is what we call a matrix. And it's called a matrix because there's really this idea that's not really a pyramid anymore. It's kind of like a chart where you have both a kind of vertical responsibility to either say your campus pastor, and then a horizontal responsibility to say someone who's responsible for your specific area. And so I think the question that you know, Evan's asking here is, hey, they're going to make this transition. They're going to have some leadership structure that is responsible for not only kind of in their existing location, but in the new location. And they're trying to figure all that out. At the end of the day, basically everyone has two reports. Maybe we can start with you, Ben. What do you think? How should, you know, a church be thinking about making that switch, adding that extra layer of leadership, and then ultimately, you know, moving forward with, you know, the actual reporting relationships? What do you think there, Ben?
I would say as soon as you can, without overextending your budget. So that's the tension, because you want to apply it right as soon as you can, because your staff's going to have to, first of all, accept it. It's going to be a new reality, a new leadership reality, which may be hard for some people who, especially our control freaks, to now have dotted lines in there. Mm-hmm. And then not only accept, implement, and refine that. So the sooner you guys can do that, it's not going to be, you're not going to throw that power on switch right away and it's going to work. The sooner you can do it, the better. Now, without overextending yourself, for us at Liquid, we did this once where we thought we were going to launch a campus, and we had the new system in place, and we brought along staffing, and then there was a delay, and when we launched the campus, and then we obviously had a revenue gap. So there, it is a bit of a dance, but I would say if you can lean on the sooner than later side of that dance, you're going to set up everybody for success, because it's an overhaul of the system.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Natalie, how are you guys structured at the Meeting House? How does that work? Because you've got a lot of campuses. So the thing that, you know, is interesting here is you're, you know, probably in the top 0.5%, you know, at 19 campuses. There's just not a lot of people doing that. So how does that reporting structure work? You're in a central services role. You're responsible for, you know, kids ministry curriculum. But then how do you interact with campuses? What does that look like? Give us a sense of that. And then what's your thoughts for Evan?
Yeah, great question. I think... Yeah, kind of to piggyback a little bit on Ben, I would say this is better as well. my experience through the Median House has been that right now we are kind of operating, it would still be a matrix model, but we have put more of an emphasis on the local ownership. So the campus pastors are really owning what's happening at their sites kind of on a new level, mm-hmm. where the central staff is acting more in a support role. So really attempting to have the campus lead pastors really driving the ship of their own sites. Mm-hmm. It hasn't always been that way. That's kind of a bit of a pendulum swing. Prior to mm-hmm. that, we had our central location was really driving things. And when we've done these, you know, solid lines, dotted lines experiences, I think one of the key learnings for myself, I have been both on the side of a youth pastor at a campus mm-hmm. and a ministry pastor at our central location. And so I've been on both sides of the coin. And what's really helpful is just to know the roles and the responsibilities of who is doing what, of who is saying what, of who has ownership on things like that. And I think just the quality of the internal communication will actually help bridge any gaps that could be present in the new realities of switching models.
Yeah, why don't you give us a bit of feedback on how can we ensure that communication is clear? I think, you know, you're sitting in a great spot because you have been on a campus side of the equation. And I think sometimes people who are on the central side can be like, how come they don't get it? So how do you, as someone who was on the campus side, you know, what did you appreciate? How could we make that communication really clear?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I actually remember when we were really trying to work this out was sitting down with, at the time, who would have been both of my supervisors, mm-hmm. kind of on both sides of the spectrum, and providing clarity so that they were speaking the same language as well. I think that was probably one of the greatest possibilities for me to have experienced as mm-hmm. a staff person, sitting down with both of those supervisors and not assuming one thing about the other or vice versa, mm-hmm. that they both were on the same page and we were all there kind of together. I think just having that direct, frank, clear communication, everybody's on the same page, really did really well in my experience.
Yeah. Totally. And I think the thing, you know, another piece of this puzzle is often, you know, the reality of it is, regardless of kind of who is the first mover. So, you know, in your case, the lead pastors, campus pastors in your location, you know, they have the solid line in other conversations. You've heard that language. But the reality of it is, regardless of who is the first mover, it just requires a lot of conversation. Like, it requires people have to get on the same page. You've got to make sure, and you've got to work the relational thing so that it doesn't get funky. It doesn't get strange. You know, you don't want people, it shouldn't feel like they've got two supervisors. It should feel like they have two people supporting them. And how, you know, how do we make that work? Now, Greg, what about you guys as you're kind of careening into a fourth location, and how are you thinking about this reporting relationship? What does that, you know, how is this working out for your church?
Well, first off, I so relate with what both Ben and Natalie have said. We had a 6-month delay, like Ben had, and the same revenue pinch, because our delay had to do with facility issues. We had inherited as biggest donation we ever got as a church, a $4.5 million property.
Wow.
Of a church that was closing and decided they wanted to strategically make it an east side. So we took it on, and then of course the surprises of what had to be done in the new codes and stuff with the city caused such a delay, as we were paying an entire staff for that, for what was going to launch in September, and it's not launching till March 11th now.
Oh, wow.
So you can imagine. And then the delay, even though I totally agree with what Ben said, that the sooner the better, you know, kind of thing, mm-hmm. In moving towards that staff, you know, that staff model, that matrix model. But what we had is we lost some of the staff, not campus pastor level, but some of the other staff to other campuses and other places, just in the long desert of that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we kind of had to rehire it. But then what I've kind of been finding, just as I stumble through this, I don't consider myself a multi-site expert at this point. I'm in it. I'm neck deep in it. And what I've been learning is probably that I, as from an assimilation point of view, you know, mm-hmm. when you're talking about, you know, connecting guests and all that involves, is that I set it up at each campus for the campus pastor for the first 6 months. And by set it up means that I'm helping with recruiting, I'm finding the right people, I'm training him, I'm getting all that stuff. And then at a six-month point, instead of doing assimilation for the campus pastor, I do it through the campus pastor.
Mm,
and then that real hard line for all the staff and all of the volunteers there, that I am simply a resource, but then the resource has to, about at the six-month point, come through the campus pastor. And if they have a question, come to me. And if they're the campus pastor does. And that shift, at the beginning when they're launching a campus, I mean, the campus pastor is more than happy to have his line almost feel like a dotted line to all those people, because, you know, it's just not his expertise and he's thrilled with all those systems being set up. But then there comes a point where he's got to take that. And for us, it's felt like about the 6 month point, that the dotted and hard lines kind of switch places.
Oh, that's good. I like that because it, you know, I think what you're doing is acknowledging, you know, particularly what I found is when campuses launch, that a strong central, you know, kind of team involvement really does drive and really favors new campuses, because as they get out and get launched, it's like, wow, this is great. It's, you know, everybody loves, like you say, in your case, assimilation, but like everybody loves when people show up and they've got the kids ministry stuff all sorted out. They're excited about that. The question becomes a year from now, and they maybe want to tweak a few things. How do they make that happen? You know, how do they, you know, change that around? Another thing that, you know, I've said in other contexts, just to kind of think this through again, regardless of really who the first mover is, my, you know, my coaching advice has been that campus staff or people that are in the regions out in the sites, their primary job is to lead through relationship and through execution. So their job is to connect people and to make stuff happen. Their job is to, you know, ensure that people are getting connected, making sure that things are actually happening. Where campus or where central staff, their primary responsibility is developing systems and deploying, you know, really our strategy. So they're strategy and system people. They should be thinking about how are we designing things? How are they, you know, making stuff happen? You know, Ben, I know at Liquid that there's, you know, you've used a tool called RACI there over the last couple of years. Can you kind of talk us through that a little bit? Give us a sense of what does that look like and how does that, you know, how has that impacted this conversation?
That's been super beneficial. If you're not familiar with it, RACI stands for Responsible, Accountable, Consulted, and Informed. So we have that in all of our job descriptions, that what you do and then where you land in relationship to that. A couple things. There can only be one person accountable for a particular task or oversight. And so we're clear on that sometimes in terms of the dotted and the straight lines. Some people, there's confusion. Am I accountable at the end of the day for this, or are you? And so having that clarity in terms of who owns responsibilities is super helpful. And then where else you fall on that spectrum in relationship, because sometimes when you move from a single to a multi-site, you may have been a personality or a person or had influence where you had a wide influence, and now you're maybe going to become a little more narrow in your influence. And when is it appropriate for you to deviate out of your lane? Or when is it appropriate for you to stay in your lane? That avoids a lot of confusion and hurt feelings. Being up clear with, nope, this ball is in this person's court. Don't take it. And that's yours. And own it and run with it.
Yeah, it's very good. You can just, if you just even search, there's a lot of resources online, RACI, R-A-C-I. If you search that, it's a great kind of framework for discussion. Again, it comes back to getting your people to talk to each other and having, you know, the conversation, making that happen. That's a great way to kind of pull that apart. Anything else you guys want to say? Anybody else want to jump in? Natalie or Greg, before we move on to the next question?
Well, I would say, and it's probably just a mechanic tactical thing that everybody might do, but our vision is to reach 1% of those within a 20-mile radius of our campus. So despite the fact that we have a campus in Park Rapids, Minnesota, 2,000 miles away, that was just a God deal. But yeah, that other than that anomaly and the curiosity that that is our fastest growing campus, who would have thunk?
Interesting.
Yeah, but what we have is a common office day that helps with this the staffing and reporting relationships. So even though everybody will have their offices on their campus, Wednesday, everybody is at the main campus for the day. And our Park Rapids staff even are Skyping in on that day and are a part of everything. And so that kind of helps us sort through, you know, things and stay on the same page, you know, as we transition through, you know, from a stack to a matrix kind of model.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great practical. What are you guys doing at the meeting house on that kind of this common staff thing?
Yeah, almost exactly what Greg had just said. We are Wednesdays as well. We do a weekly all staff meeting. So anybody that's within driving distance that can make it into the office comes in, and anybody else we run on YouTube Live. So it's really handy, and we can interact with questions and things like that. It keeps everybody in the loop and everybody clear on the mission and vision of where things are at.
That's very good. That's good. What about at Liquid? What are you guys doing? I know, what's the staff day look like for you guys?
Yeah, we have one central location. On Tuesdays, everybody comes and has their particular campus meetings there. So it's everybody comes together, but they're a little siloed, which is helpful. They get their work done. But then they could also bump into each other and have those natural meetings where they need that crosstalk. And then beyond that Tuesday meeting where we're all meeting on the same site doing our individual work, we'll also have a monthly meeting on Tuesdays where we cast big picture vision to the whole staff. And instead of doing that, you know, yearly or twice a year, we feel that we need to continue because we are, I guess that's the tension. When you are multi-site, you need to have more of those vision talks to keep everybody on the same page. If not, you start going off in your own agendas pretty quick. So the answer to the question for this person calling in with the question is they'll probably have to step up their all staff meeting meetings just to get everyone on the same page.
Yeah, it's very good. And that, you know, we're seeing that pretty well across the board. We're seeing a robust kind of regular everybody together. And I think there is as much the formal side of that, which is important. And we've talked about that, but there's also just to underline, there's the informal people, you know, it's the water cooler talk thing. That is an important piece of this puzzle because there's a certain amount of that that's caught, not taught, that just how we do life together is an important thing for sure. Well, let's take a look, listen in on our second question. We've got Mark Smith here from Chet's Creek, another fantastic church. Let's listen to what Mark has to say.
Hi, my name is Mark Smith, and I'm the communications pastor at Chet's Creek Church in Jacksonville, Florida. And we've got three campuses and actually have just merged with a smaller existing church to bring them on as our fourth campus. And so it's been a really exciting season for us. But one of the things that's kind of unique about the way that we do multi-site is each of our campus pastors at each campus is also the teaching pastor for that campus. So while the sermon series is the same and each week's message, text, and topic is the same, the actual sermons themselves vary depending on each campus because each campus pastor preaches their own message. And so I guess we're always looking for ways to help maintain the unity of our overall church, being one church in multiple locations, when you've got different communicators at each campus. And so I'd love to hear any thoughts that you guys have on how we might be able to more effectively do that. Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
This is a fantastic question. I love picked this one out of the pile because I think it attacks one of the misnomers about multi-site. I think oftentimes when we think about multi-site church, because so many churches use video teaching as a core part of the way they do multi-site, the assumption is that every multi-site church is a video-driven experience. And a part of what I love about this conversation is because it's saying like, hey, you know, we've decided to do, you know, live and local teaching hey, we're all together in this way. How do we keep everybody together? What are we doing to try to keep, you know, everything, you know, pointing in the same direction? Now, there's some interesting statistics around this. You know, the basically for the rule of thumb, not to get too much in the weeds of it, that there's only about a third of all multi-site churches are using exclusively video. So it's actually the minority position that are using all video. The vast majority or the middle of the bell curve are actually doing some combo of both. So they're doing both some sort of video and live. Now, this example where with, you know, Chet's Creek would be on the other end. So they're in that kind of 10-15% would be, you know, all live and all local. So, you know, we are seeing a lot of, you know, kind of a combo of both. We're seeing it as a piece of the puzzle. But I think the thing that's important about Mark's question here really is that whole idea of what are some other ways outside of just teaching that we kind of keep everybody together, keep us being one church and many locations. So we could talk about the teaching portion, which is fine. But then what are some other things that we're also doing to try to help kind of drive things together? Natalie, why don't we start with you? Why don't you describe, first of all, what are you doing at the meeting house from a teaching point of view? Mm-hmm. And then also help us think through, you know, what should we be thinking about, you know, how we can keep people moving together?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do video teaching. So I would say, I think we're probably in the range of about 40, six 47 Sundays per year are video teaching. And then the rest of that time would be what we just call local teaching, which is our campus pastors are teaching, but they're usually teaching on a common theme or a common thread. And we will provide from the central location, we'll provide maybe a quotes package that kind of everybody unified together, provide slide templates. So the look, the feel is very similar at the different locations, even though, as the caller said, the content itself in the teaching would be slightly different. It would still feel like a similar theme, similar thread going from campus to campus. For Good Friday, we're mm-hmm. actually trying to draw everyone a little closer together in mm-hmm. this local teaching experience this year. So we have had a group of kind of like a little working group of mm-hmm. some campus pastors and some of our central staff working together to kind of collaborate on what, you know, common pieces could be put in and through the services on Good Friday while having those local teaching experiences. So mm-hmm. that's kind of a working group that's happening right now behind the scenes at the meeting house.
That's cool. Very cool.
So that'd be one. And also from my seat, Rich and mm-hmm. I realize that for the most part, campus pastors, you know, when they're talking about profession, they're thinking about the grown-up teaching, the adult.
Yeah, right.
And everything inside of me screams, but teaching isn't just what the grown-ups get.
Yes, exactly.
It's also what the kids and the youth get. And mm-hmm. how we integrate all of those things, I think, is also really important because, mm-hmm. believe it or not, the grown-ups teaching experience isn't the only, nor is it the most important teaching experience at your churches. So one of the things that we do is that we have, I'm the curriculum pastor at the meeting house, so this is kind of a huge passion piece for me.
Yeah.
But we have worked so that we have all of our kids literally from birth through to high school on this common trajectory, this mm-hmm. common curriculum that they're moving through from birth all the way through the end of high school. And this month, I'm really excited because all of our kids and youth from birth to high school, as well as our grown-ups, are all teaching on a common theme this month.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, love it.
The entire church is it a peace month? And mm-hmm. So right from, you know, literally toddlers kind of doing the zombie walk into their classrooms, right through to the grownups, we're all talking about peace, Jesus' way of peace.
That's really cool. I love that. One of the things I love about what the Meeting House is doing, you've done, and that's obviously a core to the reason why I think it's great you're on this podcast, is, you know, I think your church is thinking robustly around how we create great experiences for kids. And, you know, you're there because of the theological distinctives of the Meeting House, you know, you've come up with some really creative solutions. And so I'm hoping people, and we'll, at the end of the episode, we'll make sure we point people towards, you know, we get more information about that. Cause I think that's a lesson there. The thing to just highlight there is I love that you're finding a way to unify the experience. That's not just let's watch, you know, a teaching pastor on video in the adult side. You're saying, hey, how do we create a common learning experience for everyone? Which is that's amazing. That's great. Greg, why don't we hear from you? What are you thinking about when how we create kind of identical experiences, keep people pulling together? You know, that can be related to teaching or not. What should we be thinking about from East Side?
Well, we're kind of on the left of the bell curve that you described. I mean, we're very much you know, every weekend is video, you know, and everything else is duplicated, but live. So our conviction is that if you go to any of our campuses, including Park Rapids, Minnesota, like you feel like you went to the same service, man, you went to East Side, but you experienced it with different people and in a different location. And so we work really hard, to have that in sync. And so, I have seen, like, we have a movement down in South America that I also work with. It was one I brought in from the Daughter Church of Eastside that I pastored. And they, you know, they get together. They had a point where on their campuses, they would get together midweek with the lead teachers, and they would almost form their messages together because they're very communal. But yep. I just thought that was a cool model. But they're very communal in how they do things, and they would actually share their best thoughts coming into that meeting on what they were going to tackle, and then just kind of form it together and go for it. And I thought that was an interesting way of if you have a model where there is live teaching, but you're going to be teaching the same message, that you actually, you know, kind of form the message together as a team. That's it's a model that we don't use here in the States for Eastside, but it is something that we have exposure to.
Yeah, very cool. There's the Ferguson brothers had what they call that the big idea preaching, and they've actually have a fairly robust approach to trying to help teaching pastors who are in multiple contexts kind of work together on it. That's something you could just search online. If you just literally search, you know, Ferguson, you know, Dave Ferguson, big idea, you'll see some information on that out there for sure. What about at Liquid, Ben? How, you know, so are the things we should be thinking about, you know, on the Unity side? Teaching is important piece of it, but what about other stuff around how we can, you know, help churches work on Unity, you know, over time?
Yeah, so we at Liquid are similar to Greg and his experience there. I like to use the terms contextualization or continuity. How much do contextualizations do you get a chance to like uniquely do what you feel God's calling you to do at your local campuses? Or continuity, this is what we feel God's calling all of us to do. And at Liquid, we land further on that end of the spectrum. But that being said, Unity is still hard to get. And so some of the ways we do that outside of our message, which is video, so it is very standardized at all of our campuses, is we will do it through a service, an all campus Sunday experience, where we bring all of our campus together under one large roof and have an event where everybody gets to experience the same service at the same time. We've done this in the past called Liquid at the Shore. If you just look, Google that Liquid at the Shore, you'll see some of that evidence from the past. And it's a big auditorium. We rent out on the shore here at Jersey, about 6,000 in terms of seating. We get everybody in there. And for at least one Sunday a year, we are all under the same roof, which really builds that unity. So that's one of the ways in which we do it.
Now, Ben, are you giving us a scoop here that you're going to do Liquid on the Shore again this year? Is this a scoop you're scooping, or are you going to stay quiet about that?
I'm going to stay quiet about this. That is one of our organizational goals.
I got to know if I got a plan to be down. That's the question. I got to know, you know. That's great. Sorry to interrupt.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, like you're alluding to that right there, Rich. It is an organizational cost to do that because you're going above and beyond. You're renting out a new facility. But we at least have that as a goal at Liquid because we see the value in relationship to it. But then we'll play that out every year in relationship to where we are in terms of funding each year. Another way in which we try to bring unity across the board outside of the message is we'll do church-wide events as well, and making sure that it's not just all localized ones, but larger ones as well. We just recently celebrated Night to Shine. And for those who are not familiar, it's with the Tim Tebow Foundation. It's a prom for special needs kids. It's actually like one of the most redeeming things I've ever experienced. I like to say it's the greatest glimpse of heaven that we get here on earth. It's just a beautiful event. And we do that for all of our campuses under one roof. It's a prom for all of the special needs children and adults from each of the campuses at one place. That, again, brings unity. So look for those unifying events where everyone could be doing the same thing outside of your Sunday service.
Very cool. That's great. Any other thing, Greg or Natalie, before we move on, that you want to comment just around how we keep people together?
Yeah, I think.
Go ahead, Natalie.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. One thing that I would mention as well are ways that we have kind of come together. Probably some of the most beautiful ways that we've all come together with all of our campuses has been through common compassion initiatives. So ways that we can really leverage our mission and the message well has been coming together to do things. That have either local or global impact. So one of the ways over the past several years is that we've been involved in an initiative called AIDS Care. And so that has been a huge project that we've undertaken with the Mennonite Central Committee, helping to provide AIDS care kits as direct caregiver kits for people in Southern Africa who are caregivers for people with HIV/AIDS. And that was a huge thing that together all of our campuses were joined together on. I wish I could tell you the number off the top of my head.
It was huge. Yeah, it was massive.
It is remarkable. I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars given to this organization to do what they do so well. And so our opportunity, just as like kingdom partners, to partner in what they're doing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And then we're stepping into a season right now where with the same organization, Mennonite Central Committee, we've kind of switched over into things called peacemaker relief kits. So that's
very cool.
For people who are actually fleeing significant issues in their own home countries. So right now we have peacemaker relief kits that are going to Jordan to help Syrian refugees who are fleeing there. So so those things have really unified our church across all campuses.
Cool. Greg, what about you? Anything else you want to think about here?
Yeah. When it comes to volunteers, we call our volunteer community change makers. And so when we do, we have found that, and I love Ben's phraseology on, you know, contextually and continuity. So I'm going to borrow that when I say this, is that we'll do our change maker appreciation in context of their individual campus communities.
Yep.
So like we'll even have Gene Apple, our senior pastor, will go and appreciate them and we'll do that there. But when we do volunteer inspiration, like we'll bring Bob Goff in to speak to our changemaker community. That'll be done at our central campus, and we bring the changemakers from all campuses together.
Right.
So inspiration together is one, but appreciation and context on the campus. Now, I'm with Natalie on this too. When it comes to compassion, our compassion efforts, if it's local compassion, it's done in context. You know, for instance, Park Rapids does a lot of work amongst the Native American Indians in their community. And, and we have other ones. Each campus has things right, you know, outside their doorstep to address. But when we do global compassion, everybody comes together and goes to our works in Kenya together, or in Thailand together, or in Chile together, or in Mexico together. And Park Rapids will send people out, and we'll have mixed teams from all campuses as one, experiencing a trip for 1 to 2 weeks together, which is a great cross-pollinization and unity builder, I think.
Yeah, very cool. Love that. Well, we're going to jump into the third question. This is the time where I get to take advantage of the fact that we have these amazing people on the podcast and ask a question that, you know, I think maybe a lot of us are wondering about. And, you know, Easter is coming, whether we like it or not. It's coming this year, April 1st. It's the countdown is on. And I know many of us are, you know, we're in the throes of, you know, making that happen. And I thought, you know, we should talk a little bit about how our individual churches are kind of dealing with Easter. How does multi-site impact Easter? You know, what are you guys working on from kind of a big day point of view? How are we, you know, what are you doing for Easter this year? I would love to hear. Ben, why don't we start with you? You know, what's going on with Liquid this year at Easter? And then, you know, is there anything particularly from a multi-site point of view that you're wrestling with?
Yeah, so we like to, for our big days, put as much creativity into our callback series as we do for the actual holiday. So I know you're asking for Easter itself.
Yeah, no, that's
but
good.
I'm also pivoting and saying oftentimes churches can put a lot of effort into their holiday services, Easter and Christmas, and then have nothing in the tank for the service afterwards.
Right.
And let's be honest, you're going to get your numbers for Christmas and Easter kind of regardless of what you do promotionally or creatively because of family obligations or a cultural obligation to attend a religious service. Now, that being said, when you have a new guest there, we like to try to funnel more of our creative efforts and resources onto the callback series, which we're calling people back to. So they're in the seats, they're watching your Easter experience. What is the thing you're saying? Hey, thanks for coming out for obligation sake. Now that you're here, come on back for this series next week. It's going to impact your life. What is that series? So the churches that are planning Easter right now, I'd say, and plan that callback series. For us at Liquid, we'll probably do something in relationship to the This Is Us television series right now. I guess apparently it's pretty popular. everyone's watching it and crying.
Yes.
And so we're gonna have some crying moments in our service as well, and like leverage that cultural moment for our callback series in terms of Easter. That's one of the big things that we're trying to do. We try to do every holiday service.
Right. Very cool. Greg, what about from Eastside? What are you guys thinking about? How do you think about, you know, big days? Maybe even, you know, from an assimilation point of view, are there things that you think about on these days that maybe run a little bit different? What did you do at, you know, Christmas Eve this year that maybe is impacting when you're thinking about Easter, that sort of thing?
Well, one of the big learnings that I just posted on my blog was that the gift matters. And we just kind of stumbled into this thing that when we get ready for a big Sunday, you know, we give away homemade cookies, you know, in these nice orange cups that we give away. And for, you know, we had 20,000 for Christmas. So it's like, how do you get fresh cookies in cups at that level? You know, it's just a machine. Right. So I wanted to give our cookie team some needed time off because it's two cookies per cup. So you can imagine what that would have been like. And
that's crazy.
So we just thought, let's give away steel thermo mugs and put some a packet of hot cocoa and a couple candy canes in it well in advance and call it a day. And even though that was a slightly less expensive gift, the attraction to guests was so big that it was about 2.5 times more guests came and identified themselves than the year before, even though the attendance was almost identical. And the I feel like when it comes to Easter, we're already starting to research what might that mean besides our usual giveaway. What could we do at Easter that's replicatable on all campuses, but will attract guests? And I think that's really important. Also is going to all the campuses I look at and where might we do additional guest central expressions? You know, wherever we drive our guests, do we need additional carts, additional locations?
Right.
And where would that be on all campuses that are most strategic, where the traffic is, you know, and that kind of thing. I do also super agree with Ben on what he calls the callback series. Everything we do at Eastside is a corridor. It's not a cul-de-sac. So Easter's a corridor into something. And so we followed up Christmas in that spirit with our biggest series of the year. It's At the Movies. Our attendance goes up by 1,500 people or more for
that
series.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's the follow-up to Christmas. Then we're doing This Is Us, which is ironic, you know, but we're doing This Is Us. And then Easter is going to feed into another one that this will be the third time we've done it in 5 years, but a You Ask For It series where people put in their questions and he addresses kind of some hot button issues. And that is, I think it'll be a good draw for our Easter crowd. And another thing we do is we do Easter as a big baptism Sunday at Easter.
Okay, cool. Very cool.
And baptism is a very strategic assimilation point for us. We follow up in 4 or 5 different ways over a 10-day period, everybody who is baptized in ways that will hopefully bring them into our Next Steps environment so they can find a small group and a ministry team. And
very cool.
Those ways all get ignited right at the baptistry so that 1 out of 5 people that are baptized end up in Next Steps very quickly.
Very cool.
So we'll baptize between 180 and we actually baptize on the nose 250 at one Easter service.
Wow.
And Easter just seems like a time. And most of those are spontaneous, believe it or not. But because we offer all the clothes and the towels and the photos and everything else, they are willing to do it. So we have fresh decisions that allow the callback series, I think, to have a big impact and the follow-up for Next Steps as well. And that unity on all campuses, I think, adds momentum and energy to that effort.
That's cool. One thing I want to, there's a lot there. This is why I love this podcast, because everybody's given just so much value, which is amazing. But one of the things to underline there, which is definitely a trend, or we see it in lots of churches, is, you know, growing prevailing churches don't shy away from core content. They, you know, core series that they're going to come back to time and time again. And actually on today's podcast, we've heard that, you know, I know, you know, for the Meeting House, I know the, you know, conversations around peace and how do we live, you know, that lifestyle and how does that look is a common theme at the Meeting House, which is wonderful. And then here, you know, Greg, you listed a couple different series that you're like, hey, we've come back to At the Movies, or, you know, you asked it, this idea of, you know, kind of common questions. I think sometimes churches can labor under the like, oh my goodness, we've got to come up with something new all the time. But actually that content you come back to actually is highly attractional. They're like, hey, I want to kind of revisit that. And we all know that in any content, you can't cover everything you need to cover in, you know, one shot at it by any means. And so it's fine to, you know, come back to that. So, which is wonderful.
Well, what's great about that, Rich, is that series like You Ask For It and At the Movies use different movies every year and different questions every year.
Yeah.
And so it's the package that has high impact and becomes attractional and guests invite other guests. And what worked on one campus, now they can't wait to do it at their campus when it's launched, you know, so it really gives a lot of energy.
No, that's fantastic. Natalie, what about you? What are you thinking about for Easter and you know, particularly from a family ministry, kids ministry point of view, what are you thinking on that front? How do you think about big days and how does that relate to multi-site?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually just made a whole bunch of notes from Greg and Ben that I'm just going to take back and implement. So we're good. No, I'm just kidding. But what is really helpful to think about are, yeah, how the attendance kind of ebbs and flows around those big events. I know this year in particular, we are very aware of some of our attendance trends. And so leading into Christmas this year, we did a series because we know that leading into Christmas, our attendance ramps up. So kind of from probably mid-October and onward, we start to see that ramp up. And so we did a series called Bad Ideas. And honestly, the connection points with that series were huge for seekers. We had a lot of people who were just interested in the content. Some of our highest online content that people interacted with were as a result of that series. And so we used that to drive into Christmas then, which was fantastic. And then, yes, having a great callback series coming out of Christmas, we found is always very helpful. And going into Easter, yeah, it turns out we're also doing This Is Us. I'm just kidding.
Nice.
But maybe we just will at a Unity now. So we'll see.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
But going into Easter, as we're talking about Easter, and even throwing back to that question earlier about local teaching and video teaching, we're actually over the Easter weekend, Good Friday is going to be a live teaching, kind of local teaching experience at each one of our campuses. And then Easter Sunday will be a video teaching. And so we're kind of bridging both of those.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's neat.
Contextualization on Good Friday and then that great feeling of unity on Easter Sunday. But when it comes to kind of beyond the grown-ups piece of things, I would say something really important to consider is when all of these guests are coming through your doors, that the kids' experience is actually going to be something that drives families back to your church. So if your kids, if kids are having a great experience, and that goes to the quality of content, that goes to the enthusiasm of volunteers. It kind of covers the from their moment they arrive at your door, kids' experience. If it's a positive one, it will probably actually be the kids who are saying the next Sunday, "Hey, Mom, Dad, can we go back to that church?" Like,
right.
They have a good experience and they're driving the ship. Parents are not going to say no when they're asking them. And so whatever your ministries can do to support and augment the experience of kids and kids ministry, I think could be absolutely huge. And then I think just as far as what that looks like in each context could vary on a huge range of what that actually looks like. But one thing I will say is, and something that we have done for as long as I can remember at the meeting, is we put, when it comes to our budget for what kids are doing on a Sunday morning, our two largest budgetary pieces go into Christmas and Easter. And now when I say our large budgetary pieces, I think when it comes down to the nitty gritties of things, we spend about, you know, 36 cents or something like this on supplies per kid per Sunday, you know. But when it comes to Christmas and Easter, I think we range closer to like $1 or $1.25.
And which so is significant,
the
right?
Value, like, yeah. The value that we're putting into that time, because it's not just the kids' experience on that Sunday morning. So say for Easter, Sunday morning, we want the kids to have a great experience. We want them to take something home that they're making, that they're interacting with, because then when it's, as soon as it gets home, it becomes a reminder. It becomes something that brings back the conversation of that family to what the church experience was.
Absolutely. And I think the thing to highlight there for folks is, we all know that kids and youth ministry is critically important for churches that are wanting to make a difference. And there is a pinch point on these days where, you know, you think Easter Sunday morning, you're going to have a lot of guests. You're going to have people who, you know, have just come for the first time, but that's also a difficult Sunday to recruit people in kids ministry. And, you know, on the adult side, we just jam more people in, like put more chairs in at the back, you jam them in. But you can't do that in kids ministry. You have to scale up your number of volunteers to the number of guests, and that creates an extra pinch point. And so communicating clearly the vision behind, you know, with your team to say, hey, this is a critically important Sunday. We need you to plug in. Ben and Greg, anything else you want to say about Easter before we move on and kind of wrap up the episode?
Yeah. How about you? First of all, champion Natalie for her champion kids. I love that idea for creating a great kid experience would then lead in to have people come back. I love, as a parent, I'm like, oh yeah, that that would be the case for me. Right. One of the things in terms of planning the Easter, I actually jumped ahead and got to what's happening after Easter. But as multi-site churches are still planning their Easter experience, I usually in the brainstorming process like to aim for the moon, and if I miss, I'm going to land amongst the stars. But right. we have permanent and portable campuses, and oftentimes we have this killer idea that's going to land at our permanent facilities because of the infrastructure that's there, but we cannot scale it down for a portable. And right. So I've been encouraging our creative teams to actually plan and brainstorm with your least optimal campus in mind. And we know we don't want the low ceilings, the bad lighting, the worn out seats. Like if we can do it there and it's a win there, it's going to be a win at all of our campuses. So right. I'm actually trying to reverse engineer that. And then the other thing is a sensitivity in terms of when you roll that out. For us, during Christmas, we had at our broadcast campus, it's three times bigger than the rest of our other campuses. And we had a lot of production bells and whistles. We had some incredible dancers with glow-in-the-dark suits on. We had, you know, snow falling in our auditorium during right. the end of the production. And that wasn't happening at any of our other campuses. So we purposely kept that out of our highlight video, not right. to rub it in the face of other campuses. So there's a sensitivity there. So how do we do these things? But then when do we purposely kind of hold it back in the communication and the recap or the highlight video afterwards is a sensitivity I would give towards anyone participating in a multi-site campus.
That's a good practical tip. Greg, anything else? Just kind of final wrap up on Easter?
Well, I was just going to say that I think we should consider in this conversation a multi-site. We consider our online community as a campus.
Oh, good flag. Yeah.
That was something we just kind of drove a stake in the ground. That has implications on big weekends like Easter and other things. And what that means for us is in the same way that I get, you know, connection cards via Guest Central on all the campuses, I also get the electronic connection cards from our online campus. And our follow-up then is the same for them. But what's kind of cool is if I get one on Saturday night, sometimes I'll surprise the person by calling or emailing them, because our goal for the online campus, you know, Rich, you say this, that actual getting together with other humans in a location is not going away. You know, it's not going to go away. Yeah. And so I'll say, hey, they actually put some interest in it. We offer things that would invite them to come on campus as a result of these big weekends. Mm-hmm. And some of them will even sign up for Next Step. So I'll call and say, hey, why don't you come in tomorrow? And they do. And they introduce themselves to me personally because I ask them to. And in some cases, after a big weekend, when we have these follow-up series, I will send out an email to everybody who attended online on the online campus and say, hey, meet me. My name is Greg, or we'll designate somebody on other campuses as well. Meet me at the info counter. I'll give you a quick tour. Come a little early. I'll have free coffee for you.
Oh, that's a good flag.
Give you a tour
of
the campus. And then, you know, just building bridges to that community. But I think it starts by acknowledging your online community in whatever way you can, as a campus as well, particularly on these big weekends.
Yeah, that's great. And that's I think you've teed up a great conversation in the future around how do we, you know, really merge the kind of online and offline experiences. I know all three of your churches do incredible things online and have, you know, great stuff to kind of help feed people back in. I love what the Meeting House is doing with kids online. There's all kinds of cool stuff happening there. So that, I think you've teed up a great conversation, you know, for the future as well. Well, I've loved having you guys on this today. Our hope is to do one of these, you know, every month. And so I'd love to hear from people that are listening in. You know, if you've got questions, please just submit them to me. Record an audio. You heard how it went today. Email it over to me, rich@unseminary.com. And we'll listen to everything that we get, and we'll pull out a few and make sure we put them on. As we wrap up, I'd love to hear, you know, from our panelists around, you know, hey, how can we get in touch with their church and, you know, that sort of thing. Is there anything you want to highlight? Maybe we'll start with you, Natalie. If people want to learn more about the Meeting House, what you're doing, how can they get plugged in with you?
Yeah, if people want to check out more about the Meeting House, they can go to themeetinghouse.com. Also, if you're just super curious about the kids' curriculum that we're producing, again, we do birth all the way through until the end of high school, and you can go right to curriculum.church, and everything is there, and it's free.
It's free, which is a bad idea. I've been saying to Natalie for years it's a bad idea, but it's completely free, and it's amazing curriculum.
Thank you, Rich. And if it becomes monetized, we'll just all blame Rich. So that's cool.
It's my fault. If you have to pay for it, it's my fault.
Curriculum.church. We'd love to hear from you.
Oh, that's great. Greg, how about you? How can people get in touch with you or with the church?
Okay, well, the easiest way probably to get in touch with me is I just drive people to my website. It's gregcurtis-assimilation.com. gregcurtis-assimilation.com. And Mike, I have a coaching ministry called Climbing the Assimilators, where I just try to envision people to become Sherpas and helping people make the climb of connecting with your church. And so I do base camps and different things like that, other offerings as well, that just kind of resource people in just connecting well the people that God is bringing to our campuses every single weekend. So that there's ways, just little buttons to click to get comments to me and requests to me, and I email back right away, and would just love to hear from anybody.
Yeah, I know, and I've said this in other contexts. Greg is just so smart on all that stuff, and you know, most churches, the problem isn't that you're not getting enough guests; it's you're not getting those guests to stick and stay. And you know, the great thing that Greg has really led there is he's developed a proven way to see their guests get connected to their church, which is amazing. So, and Ben, finally, how can people get in touch with you or the church? How can they stay plugged in?
Yeah, liquidchurch.com is the church website if you want to find out more about Liquid in general. For myself, you can find more information about me at my website, benstapley.info. And actually, since we were talking about brainstorming Easter concepts, I'd encourage people to check out benstapley.com/brainstorm.
There
they can watch a video about how to do that well.
Perfect. Well, thanks, friends, for being on the podcast. We're, at Unseminary, we're really passionate about helping churches reach more people. And I'm just so honored that you've taken time to listen in today. Regardless of where you're at in your multi-site journey, we just want to be here to help. Again, send us your questions, and we look forward to talking again in the future. Thanks so much. Take care.